Welcome to the Lonely TARDIS. Join us on a journey through Time Lords and space. We are your helpful guide to everything Gallifrey and Doctor Who. This is Season 3, Episode 1, The Rebirth of Lonely TARDIS. As we have what do they call it? Reincarnated? No, not reincarnated.
What are you, crazy?
Yes.
You suddenly forget what it's called? Like, really?
Reanimated?
Almost. You're getting there.
I'm Dolly Domofsky. That luscious pipe you heard there, Stephen Strum.
Luscious.
I said luscious pipe. Did not mean it that way.
You know what you meant.
Also,
is that what you think luscious sounds like? Like you turn into some weird gravelly, like Wolf Among Us thing.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, scream if you want to go faster. I don't know.
Also, Sean Norton is with us, although he might be terrified now.
No, it's like dealing with a puppy.
This is par for the course for Sean. Sean deals with me enough.
And Marcus would have loved to have been with us, but he is floating out in the middle of the Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
Basically, also dead to us.
I'm sure he would have loved to have been here instead.
Yeah.
Oh, poor guy. I feel real bad for him.
He is a vampire, so his skin just kind of... I mean, all Welsh are vampires.
I was supposed to say English in any capacity.
Welcome back, gentlemen. We did it. We've made it to a brand new season of Doctor Who.
Finally, right? Like, it feels like this is taking forever.
Well, it's been
8 months almost?
8 months since the last episode.
We said goodbye to Mr. Matt Smith.
So it feels like it's taken forever because it has taken forever.
Hey, actually, it's exactly 8 months to the day right now since that fateful Christmas episode.
Since we lost handles.
Yeah. Been working out a lot since then, so we lost handles.
Never forget. No, wrong seat. No.
We had the first episode, Don't Breathe, of the Series 8 of Doctor Who, starring Peter Capaldi, Jenna Coleman now.
I think it's just Jenna Coleman,
It's just Jenna Coleman. She dropped the Louise. Is it Paternaster Gang?
Sure.
Something like that. The Scooby Gang, as I like to call them.
Yeah, that's from Buffy, though, so they get the, I don't know if that works.
Yeah. Brand new Doctor Who. We did it. Peter Capaldi is the Doctor, finally.
Yeah, we did it. We made it. We weathered the storm, you guys.
For me, that will recall, Mr. Capaldi became the 12th, technically 14th Doctor, way back in December at the very end. And we did not know what to expect from him over these next 8 months. But this first episode really, I think, really revealed a lot and really set itself up as a completely different Doctor. And we'll get to Peter's Doctor, his rendition, in a second here. We will do a extra quick recap because really it's going to be all about our thoughts about this episode rather than the recap. Well, I'm going to make sure these recaps are cut a lot shorter than in the past. But and we also
so we've been saying for about 800 years.
Yeah. Anyways, Peter steps out of the TARDIS.
Exterior, scene one.
Exterior, scene
Twilight.
One. Twilight.
The dinosaur rampages in the distance as the Paternoster Gang confers with London's finest. Meanwhile, a blue box thrown upon the beach. Oh, wait, sorry. Shortened recaps. Okay.
Shortened recaps. And it wasn't thrown upon a beach. It was spit up by a giant Tyrannosaurus Rex. Apparently, the Doctor had been time traveling, was eaten by a T-Rex, and ended up in London, hanging out with the Paternaster Gang. He was spit up. And the dinosaur is murdered. He's set ablaze. He or she is set ablaze. And the Doctor decides to try to find out who committed this heinous act. The Paternaster Gang also tries to deduce who did this. And in the end, they circle back to automatons, robots.
Droids,
you might call them. That have been collecting skin from humans and dinosaurs, apparently. over the last several million years.
Not just skin. I mean,
organs and
organic.
I mean, pretty much anything they need to rebuild their situation.
All the good stuff.
Which is a nice nod to season
two.
Golden Fireplace. But we can get to that, Dolly. I apologize.
No, that's in fact, there are many nods to Girl in the Fireplace.
They're constantly referencing it through the episode.
None that the Doctor can remember.
Exactly. And so he comes face-to-face with kind of the main one-eyed cyborg dude who looked a lot like the cyborg from last season, but sadly was not. I was wrong. Not of the same race. And they have a battle on this floating hot air balloon ship, and Doctor wins out. And we're greeted to a very touching scene at the tear-jerking.
Sean said skin. Yes,
okay. That's what Dolly meant before, but he got wibbly wobbly.
Dolly.
he threw it up. And that's where we stand. So we have a new doctor that does not remember much of the people that are around him. And we have a Clara that does not trust nor seem to think of this new doctor as her doctor. And then we have the Paternoster gang, which are totally fine with the new 12th incarnation. So really, let's just dive right into our observations, our thoughts. The big one is, of course, Peter Capaldi's version of the Doctor. I want to find out what you guys thought. I'm going to start with Stephen. Stephen, what did you think about the Doctor?
I mean, I think it's honestly just very hard to make that kind of assumption, or to make any kind of like assumptions about what he's going to be in the first episode. It's like making an assumption about what David Tennant was going to be like, because throughout the majority of the story, he is not who he is going to be in the future. He is like, unless they intend for him to just, you know, consistently be like sort of half crazy and dazed all the time. It's just not going to be what we're going to see. So I don't know. It's tough to tell. I felt he was a little ill-defined at first. And I think that's is largely just because that is what is going on with the story. Like, he doesn't know who he is yet. And that sort of thing. It does definitely seem like they've went for a more like adult isn't the right word. It is a slightly more serious doctor. He is not being the kind of crazy running around, you know, crazy man with a blue box sort of thing like Matt Smith or anything like that. He is definitely much more of a trying to solve this mystery and solve the crime and save the world immediately and worry about the rest later kind of thing. He reminded me, and I think it's pretty clear that they were going for this. He reminded me a lot of William Hartnell, with just like, I have just recently watched An Adventure in Time and Space recently, another two times, and
still fantastic.
Still very good. And it reminded me a lot more of that kind of era and a little bit of that, where he also just kind of seemed a little unsure of himself. You know, the Matt Smith especially was sort of characterized a lot by just sort of like constantly putting on this like goofy face to make everybody feel better, where then he really didn't know what was going to happen next. And then just like sometimes shit would just fall into his lap that would fix everything or allow him to fix everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one seems like much more active. For as much as he is older, he's not just like a guy that is letting things happen to him. He is jumping into the river and leaving people behind. You know, traditionally it's always the companions who don't stay put, but him, he was just like, I don't have time to listen to any of you because I have to go solve a mystery. I have to go figure out who did this. I have to go figure out what's going on there. And he's leaving everyone else behind. So it's a nice little inversion there. And like Clara is kind of the more reasonable person in this situation, which again is a much more of a classical Doctor Who type thing where, you know, you have the Doctor is the one kind of saying like, we have to do something, you know, we have to protect these people or whatever, and, you know, I need to do this or I need to research this. You know, it manifested in different ways depending on the different doctors. So, you know, Hartnell was very much like, I want to observe things and see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Pertwee was definitely more of a, like, let's negotiate and, like, talk to these people and figure out what's happening that way. But there was always somebody on the outside who was just like, well, let's look at this objectively. And there was always a stuffy British person doing that. Brigadier General Lethbridge Stewart, for instance, but Clara is kind of in that role, which I think fits because, as we see in a couple of flashbacks, she is a school teacher. She, you know, she has a sort of air of authority that she can derive from that part of her backstory that we didn't really see much of in the previous season, but now we get a look at. So there you go.
That's a very astute assessment, I guess.
Yep.
Okay, thank you for your sterling response.
That was really good. I definitely didn't get lost halfway through that and forget what we were talking about. That was awesome.
Go ahead.
It was really good.
Yeah, actually, it kind of left me a little speechless there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna piggyback a little bit on what you said about the doctor in general. You said it right at the beginning while I was still paying attention.
No, I could literally see when you stopped paying attention because you leaned forward and like just started looking at something else.
No,
it's like, oh,
that's
doing
why, that's why
you
I never do this stuff on camera. Nope.
No, I. You bring up this great point about we don't know what this doctor really is going to be at. This first episode was not only him trying to find out who he is and Clara trying to find out who he is, but us as a viewer trying to get reacquainted. And I did this brief question I threw out to people where I felt that for many people, this is going to be their first doctor. And by that, I mean they may have caught that tail end of Matt Smith, you know, the time of the doctor, the day of the doctor, the whole 50th anniversary celebration, and may have started watching Doctor Who with that. But this will be their first doctor, right? There's a whole lot of stuff happening there. They're going to now grow with this doctor. Peter Capaldi will be the one that kind of formulates their view of that character. So I find it really interesting of what those people are going to be experiencing, because they're now growing with the doctor as much as he's growing with not only the actor as the role, but the character within the series. And this first episode, he was all over the place. He didn't know what he wanted to talk to, what he wanted to talk about, how he wanted to go about doing things. But that's kind of what I found really endearing about him. Because as we kind of said the last year and when the specials took place, there was a hard reset on Doctor Who with the 50th anniversary. From that point forward, everything is brand new. For the most part. Obviously, we're going to have Claire, we're going to have Vastra in them, but it's a brand new story, it's brand new everything, and it's made for people who are just becoming new fans to the show and to kind of grow with it. And so this Doctor was, to me, Capaldi's performance nailed it. He didn't know what he wanted to be. At the beginning, he was everywhere. By the end, you really figured out what I felt. You figured out what he wanted to do with that character, and that he's this often rude individual, which I love, calling humans, what do you say, pudding brains?
Pudding brains.
Fantastic.
Land of the pudding brains.
Exactly. World full of pudding brains. By the way, there are fantastic one-liners in this episode. But he isn't quite trusting of humans yet. He considers them to be almost lower life form. By the end, he comes to realize that, you know, he's here for a purpose, and that is because he's meant to help humans. And then the whole idea of his face and you know, they brought up the fires of Pompeii ever so briefly by harking back to it and saying, "I've seen this face." He screams out, "I've seen this face before. What is it trying to tell me? What am I trying to tell myself that I'm using these old faces?" Right, and so. We heard that towards the tail end of the Day of the Doctor, Time of the Doctor, Day of the Doctor, in which Matt Smith spoke to Tom Baker, and that whole thing kind of took place about the Doctor being able to revisit faces in the future. So I think what we're starting to find out now is this Doctor is new to his body. He's going to be wily. He's going to be rude. He's going to be constantly questioning, asking people, and not knowing who he is or who he's supposed to be. And I love that about him. I think Capaldi nailed that aspect of the role. And then, to top it off, he goes off on his own and does his own thing, much more so than any doctor, I think, in the last few iterations from Eccleston and forward. Capaldi is, again, is willing to just kind of let people catch up to him instead of him waiting for others. The whole bit with the hair and, you know, gray hair and don't breathe, that whole aspect when they're in the restaurant, I thought was terrific. I found that there was so much that was I won't say attractive, but really kind of glued me to him as the doctor I've kind of been wanting and needing and deserving for a few years.
That sounds familiar.
Right?
That sounds, yeah.
Because we talked about this way last year that we need a guy who's a take charge kind of dude. And this is him. And then Clara's reaction. Clara or Claire? I'm going to call her Clara because the doctor says that. Her reaction to him was great because that was the yin and yang. She doesn't trust him. She doesn't know who he is. He's not her doctor. He comes right out and says that he's not her boyfriend, which was great. A great note. So, I thought it was a fantastic performance by Capaldi.
I think you're missing one thing with the, like, just for the record of the I'm not your boyfriend thing. Like, it's the follow up to that really makes that important. Like the point that, like, she's like, I know, and he's just like, yeah, but I wasn't saying it for you. Like, saying it for himself. I think that was an important distinction there. Like reassuring him, like point, like explaining it to himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At the very end of the episode, you know, somewhat of a spoiler, but I'm sure everybody's seen it by now if you're listening to this. She gets a phone call from Matt Smith, who's on Trenzalore, and he says, you know, I'm always going to be your doctor. I may not have the same face, but I have the memories. I know who you are. And then Capaldi echoes that and says that he is the same person. He's going to have a different purpose in her life, but he's the same person. And we, you know, I think that whole interplay was just a nice way to cap this introduction. So, Sean, what did you feel? That's great. Wonderful to hear about Sean.
Yeah, like I always love that Sean has such great insight into the show and always like really, he's really the voice of
like the silence, right? He's kind of the silence. You don't know that he's there, but he's there.
Yeah.
Are you done?
There you go.
Okay,
go ahead.
Here we go.
No, I appreciate that you left me so much to talk about and chew on here. It's good.
I threw a lot at you, yeah.
Okay. It's clear, and we've talked about this numerous times, that the show really needed some new life, right? And it needed some new direction and everything.
It needed
like
to be regenerated.
Oh, shut up. Nailed it. Steven's on fire tonight.
That's not a reincarnation.
You can't buy him a bucket. Is it the shoes?
is it the shoes? Yeah.
But you know whether or not we get that this season is questionable. Because obviously Moffat's still behind the scenes and pulling the strings and whatever. The Emmy Award-winning Moffat, I might add.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we just found out. Okay.
That said. There were some weaknesses with the episode. I don't know if they were general Moffat-isms. I did like that it wasn't so, like, there wasn't a lot of jumping around in time and coming back and forward and getting lost. If you recall when Matt debuted Mr. Smith, he, you know, and Amy, the girl who waited, that was the whole arc for that series. And he's like, you know, she was growing up, but then he came back 2 years later or whatever. None of that happened. I like that it was a straightforward episode, right? You know, I think the villain could have been done a little better, but we can talk about that.
I feel like we will get to that.
But there are no doubts that, Capaldi owns this, right? Yes. I mean, in his very first outing, like he's already started to carry the show on his shoulders, right? Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that he'll be people's first doctor because I never even thought about that, and that's a brilliant point to make. But if there are people out there who doubted him, and as the hardcore fan I am, I actually can't fathom that. But I leave it open to the possibility that there are people out there that couldn't see him succeeding at this. Mm-hmm. I think within minutes, like it was just like sold, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it was interesting because they did the usual post-regeneration eccentricity and stuff like that. but it wasn't, it didn't seem as bad as it had been in the past. You know, his brain wasn't working right, and you know, it was taking him time to figure stuff out. And I thought it was very funny, very cute that he confused Clara and Strax. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, you're similar heights.
He had also confused her with handles. you put on weight. And then, you know, there were some really cool beats there. But his performance is just already, like, it's just marvelous, right? And I think you could tell pretty early on, even when he wasn't, you know, working right, and the kind of hints and teases were done, you know, dropped throughout the series. Like, why does he recognize his face, even though he can't place it? And you know, this, that, whatever. I mean, he's just fantastic. Like, and he is so different than everything we've seen in New Who. And it's just so good, right? Like, I'll be really upset if I'm wrong by the end of the season when we kind of circle back and think about what we talked about tonight. But I honestly think we're going to talk about that every week.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not the episodes rise up, you know, which was a problem with Matt's era and whatever, I do think every week we're going to talk about how brilliant Capaldi is. Mm-hmm. And not just his attack eyebrows, which are
great.
a whole other topic of conversation. But
I think the exact quote was, "These are attack eyebrows. You can take bottle tops off with these."
Yeah, it's all good until you get to them, and then it just goes haywire.
They get cross with me.
It's just, you ever look in the mirror and it's just such an angry reflection. You know, what do you think, guys? Like, oh, I recognize that. That whole scene with the homeless man was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And this episode really did shine, like, not so much with the villain, not so much with, you know, with everything else that was going on.
I would say very much not with the villain.
Yeah.
Hmm?
I would say very much not with the villain.
Hmm. But when you got him talking, right, when you got to the really Capaldi-centric stuff, whether or not it was the bar scene with Clara or, you know, with the climax with the villain or whatever, I mean, it was just riveting stuff, right? Like, yeah. Like any sort of doubts melt away when he just owns the screen. Mm-hmm. And I like that it's, you know, he was riding a horse in his nightgown and whatever. You got to keep some of the New Who style, but the ending was a conversation. Mm-hmm. Where he may or may not have talked a guy off of the ledge to kill himself. Like him pouring the, what was it, whiskey, scotch?
Yeah.
He pours the alcohol and he's like, "Well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to kill you. And I wanted to offer you a drink first because I know I would want one."
So doctor-like in the past.
And right there, I feel like that's our moment, right? And I've been thinking about this, especially while you guys have been chatting. You know, in the past, we've had the kind of stuff that sets the tone for the series, right? Like, Matt is the eccentric, "I'm a madman with a box," and Tennant is all suave with his suit, and you know, his ends with, like, "This is a fighting hand," and all this other stuff. And I didn't really think Capaldi had that, you know, even when the episode kind of quieted down, and he, you know, obviously they're setting up the whole "who am I" kind of doctor theme, which we can talk about in a minute. The fact that, like, that scene happens with the clockwork droid or whatever it is, I think that sets the tone, at least for this first couple episodes of this first series, of where we're going to be with this, yeah. this more calculated, this cold and I guess dark is the word that's being thrown around. So this darker doctor.
I don't even know if dark and, like, cold is the right term, but he's way more honest with himself. Yes. I feel like,
well, and I mean, that's kind of the whole point of going older, right? Like, and to, I think Stephen, you might've said it first, to the point where, you know, he had that conversation with Clara, and, you know, and even earlier in the episode when Bastard calls Clara out for being superficial and vain and whiny and everything, you know, he admits that it's not her boyfriend, and she's like, "Well, I never thought that." And he's like, "Oh, I'm not saying it was your fault. Like, no, this is a guy who was flirting around with everybody around him by being young looking, right?"
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And zany and kooky and you know, flirtatious or whatever.
He's the manic pixie dream guy.
Sure. Yeah.
And almost exactly, yeah.
And that's gone now. Like, this is, you know, this new set of regenerations, this new doctor. Clearly he remembers and everything, but that's done. Like, he's accepting who he is, he's accepting his history, and he's just, like you said, he's just honest now with himself, with what's going on around him. His age, his sins, his triumphs, everything. And I think that's really exciting. And I think it's such a 180 from Smith and even Tennant in a way that I mean, Moffat or no, you know, series eight or no, like, it's exciting to have this whole, like, what comes next.
Right.
Like, to see this take on the role that we haven't seen in, what, 30 years or 40, and depending on how far back you want to go.
Great point, because up until now, we've kind of been able to expect. The only thing we didn't know what would happen next is plot. But we had the characters. We knew what the Doctor was going to be like, whether it was Tennant or Smith. But right now, we don't know what's going to happen. It's a very different, ball game, I guess you could say.
Yep.
Use that hated term. But you brought up something kind of interesting in how both of you mentioned how sure of himself this Doctor is. And what I really liked was his decision-making process. And to compare and contrast that with what Matt Smith was like. So Matt Smith, I didn't say on the podcast, I think I may have said it in real life to one of you gents, was that he had these sort of look-around eyes, and that when he's trying to come up with a solution to something, it always seems like it's on the tip of his tongue, and he's scanning everything around him, and you can see me in the video. He's kind of scanning everything around him to just get it out, get it off of his tongue, because he knows the answer, but he's just it's hanging out there. Whereas Capaldi's Doctor, he's got... they focus on the eyebrows as such a pivotal aspect of his character, and he has what I call focus eyes, so that he'll stare straight ahead, at least from what I've seen just in this episode. He kind of stares straight ahead and looks for the answer and deduces the answer instead of letting it hang on the tip of his tongue until it kind of comes out naturally. Does that kind of make sense?
Sure. I mean, there's a confidence there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even when his brain wasn't working right, and he would turn around and he's like, no, you're asking the wrong questions.
Right. Yep.
Like, it's not about the who or the whatever. It's about what else has happened. Like, what else similar has happened to this, right? Mm-hmm. And he sees it even when he's kind of frantic in the bedroom or escaping or running around or even in the hall, in the alley. Like, he knows who he is, sort of. And he knows that he's frustrated with his brain, because he's still regenerating or healing or whatever. But I felt like that was much less this time. Like, it was almost like, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. Like, he was functional, he had all his faculties and everything. It wasn't like Matt Smith when he was walking into trees and getting smacked in the face and like, oh, that's all I needed to work right. He knows that much, and he just gets frustrated because he knows he's not where he needs to be. Even you saw it again with the droids, right? Like, he's like, oh, I know this is there, well, doesn't matter. Because it just doesn't come to him. But to your point, it's absolutely. It's this confidence, and it's this, oh man, it's like, it's an acceptance of the ageless time warp, right? Like, and this, I don't want to say superior being, but again, the pudding brains comes to mind. But that said, I thought that was a great juxtaposition at the end when he's clearly afraid.
Yes.
And I've been thinking about that too. And I don't know if it's a fear because he doesn't know what comes next, because this is a whole new thing, because it's uncharted waters with the, the regeneration cycle or what, but it is fascinating that there's all that confidence on the surface, but then underneath he's like, I need your help. Like, I got to figure all this stuff out and he looks genuinely hurt when she, quote unquote, looks right through him and she can't even see him and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really interesting way to take it. I'm curious. Obviously, we've seen from the trailers and this episode and stuff that they're really, they may drill down on this "Am I a good man?" theme. And I'm curious how far that goes. And I'm curious if we're going to see a lot of episodes where he's very confident during the action and the decision making and stuff, but then afterwards when he gets in his own head and he's alone and stuff, I'm very curious, or with Clara or whatever, I'm very curious how he's going to address that, and if he's going to be this kind of insecure person wrestling with what he does, how he's done it in the past, and what he should do moving forward. So I don't think we lose the heart of the character. Obviously, he's still a doctor, he's still a good guy at the end of the day, he still cares, but there's this new air about him that is just so refreshing, right?
Yeah, I totally agree, and it's kind of like when, and I was thinking about this earlier today, as I was mapping out today's episode. When you think of let's say you think of David Tennant's doctor. If you were to go to a panel with all the doctors, these last three doctors, or a talk show, David Tennant's doctor would potentially be, you know, answering fan questions and replying back, and answering fan questions and replying back, and making jokes along the way. Matt Smith's doctor would entertain. He'd be running around the stage. He'd be telling stories and be doing more entertaining to the people. And then Peter Capaldi's doctor would sit back in his chair and he would tell you stuff and you'd learn from him. You wouldn't question his story. You would just learn from Peter Capaldi's doctor. And well, then you have Christopher Eccleston's doctor who would be on the video screen because he wouldn't be there in person. But at the same time, I think when you
gotta get over it, buddy.
Yeah.
Gotta let it go.
The experience that Capaldi not only that he brings to the doctor, but that his doctor brings to the show is really interesting because he's rediscovering himself. He's just gone through this traumatic event of his whole life, re-encapsulated the impossible girl. Everything that he's known has kind of come together into one big time war and the conclusion of that and Trenzalore and, you know, everything that happened all at once, he's now fully recovering from. I don't think it would have been wise, actually, to, now looking back, I think it's fantastic that we segue away from Matt Smith and his doctor to this brand new doctor, because it is a brand new era, and this doctor is new. It's not, he provides a whole new aspect that we hadn't seen.
I do wonder how much he carries with him, right? How much, I mean, as we saw in the 50th, you know, there was a lot of themes leading up to that about, you know, the one who regrets and the one who forgets and the time war and everything. And now that's done. But at the same time, this is a doctor who, he did a lot. Like, there was a lot of crazy stuff that happened under Matt Smith. And then, what was it, 800 years on Trenzalore and seeing his own death. And all. I mean, obviously, time can be rewritten, but... It's. I'm going to be very curious to see how much of that carries over.
And he's over 2,000 years old, this doctor.
Exactly. And again, in the trailers, he's like, you know, I've lived for 2,000 years. I've made mistakes, and it's time to, what is it, fix those or live up to those or answer for those? Excuse me, something like that. So I don't know. I'm curious how much of it is going to be the new forward-facing and how much of it is going to be like more of that. You know, this is what happens when you live for this long and you're the last of your, well, supposedly the last of your race, and you have to make the tough decisions and stuff like that. So, because he just seems no nonsense, you know.
Right.
And I think that's great. So.
So let's talk more about just the episode in general, Stephen. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you done, Sean? Or
well, I was just going to say I think a good segue is to talk a little bit about Clara. Because I'm curious what you guys think, because I think it became obvious pretty early, and I think we talked about this with Marcus on one of the last episodes. It became obvious pretty early that she was going to be a cipher for the audience, right? Mm-hmm. And she was going to be the way they handled people, and my guess is it's the younger audience they're afraid to lose, how they were going to handle this regeneration, not from like a Tennant to Smith, the younger, still handsome and whatever, and aloof, but the older, right?
Right.
And that is 100% what happened in this episode. Like, she is absolutely the audience having to deal with the whole, like, this is a crazy change. Why is your face wrinkled? Why are there gray hairs? Like, you're not the doctor, blah, blah, blah. So I'm curious how you guys felt about that and the fact that so much of the episode was hinging on the whole, like, she watched him regenerate. She knows who he is, but at the same time, she thinks she doesn't know him anymore, like, story. Which I think, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't happened before.
Right.
So, I mean, Rose kind of dealt with it, but it was done in like 30 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but this was a whole episode and other characters calling her out and her having to deal with it. And they were bickering in the diner and or the restaurant and all this other stuff. So I'm curious what you guys thought about that. And now her as a character and whether or not you think this changes her going into season 8, where she actually shows some, you know, for lack of a better word, some character. Like she showed some emotion. She got fired up and stuff. So I just don't know if it's all good. But anyway, to you.
To you, Steven. Long sigh. Clara.
Yeah. I mean, so I read a quote today by Stephen Moffat where somebody asked Stephen Moffat why all of the Doctor's companions, at least his starting companions for each new Doctor in each new series, are young, attractive women. And Moffat explained that the reason that it was that it wasn't just because of formula, but because it was good storytelling. Those are his words. And he said something like, if you look at the kind of people that would be attracted to the Doctor, you know, that would be willing to go out with him, it would be people that are young, don't have a lot of connections or a lot of ties keeping them in the world. Like, it's not going to be a mother of six children because they're not going to leave their six children around. It's not going to be a 60-year-old man because just doesn't have the energy for it or anything like that. Or, you know, they're settled down or whatever. So it's going to be people who find the Doctor attractive and people who don't have a lot of ties and are willing to be more adventurous and that sort of thing. And Clara is in the weird position of that she started off as the kind of character that you could definitely believe that she went to hang out with the Doctor because maybe she was attracted to him or attracted to what he offered in some way or another. I think that, I don't necessarily know about Moffat's quote there, just like immediately, like I think he leaves open a lot of weird sort of loopholes and a lot of weird sort of unsaid things with that statement. But anyway, like ignoring that and just taking what he says at face value, you can kind of take Clara jumping on with the Doctor originally with Matt Smith as just, you know, at his version of face value. Now you've got Clara, who is kind of the doctor, the first companion who is going to, you know, assuming that he goes from more than one companion, she's the first one that has to basically, like, she's stuck with this version of him, quote unquote, stuck with him. You know, she didn't choose to be with this older Doctor. You know, she didn't choose to be with this version of the Doctor. You could say that, like, Amy and Rory didn't, you know, they chose to be with Matt Smith, and, you know, Rose, when she went from Christopher Eccleston to David Tennant, you know, she chose to be with Christopher Eccleston at first, but the difference between Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant isn't quite as pronounced as it is between Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi, both physically and just emotionally, and like the kind of way that they carry themselves. So I think it's definitely interesting that it was necessary that they addressed a lot of that stuff in the story, like addressed the way that he looks and stuff like that. I think it was necessary. If you take what Stephen Moffat says at face value, I think it was necessary. Other than that, I thought it was maybe a little bit awkward that they tried to shoehorn a lot of that stuff into this particular story where they have, like, you know, it's just like, oh, well, of course we have to talk about the obvious, which is that, like, you know, the Doctor looks older now. So is Clara going to be superficial about it or not? Let's find out. And Madame Bastra, she is going to be here, and she's either – it's sort of unclear to me if Madame Bastra was being intentionally sort of insulting to Clara to tease out a response, or if she was actually just being, you know, she was objectifying Clara in some way, not on purpose, but subconsciously. The whole thing with the veil, I think they leave a lot of that up to subtext. And I think if, like, you're going to go all out and say a bunch of this stuff, you should probably just say it, or you should just not say it at all. And, I think, like, the best stuff that they do with Clara is the stuff that ignores that completely. And it's more like we're tying back into how Clara is a teacher. She is a person who comes from some position of authority over people who are still learning. And, you know, the Doctor is now in a position where he is now still learning. So she is well equipped to deal with this version of the Doctor. And I think when they are writing her in that method, that's fine. But then on top of that, they then write her into a position where she's depending on the Doctor for different things, like when they're in the tunnels and he leaves her behind and she's like, you know, don't shut the door on me, you know, which, you know, it's pretty obvious, but it's just like, I like that she is able to get herself out of there. Then again, she's not, though, is she? Like, she's almost able to get herself out of there, but then has to wait on the Doctor. I almost thought it would have been better if it had been the other way around, where the Doctor had been the one in trouble and she had pulled him out of the fire. Because I think it sends mixed messages about the kind of relationship that they're trying to establish between these characters. Like, they want to have it both ways. They want to have it, this is the new confused Doctor who's searching for answers and questioning himself. And they also want to have it like, well, it's the Doctor, so the Doctor always saves the day in the end in some way and saves the person at the end and blah, 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 blah. I think they're not 100% sure what they want to do with Clara. I think they have definitely an idea, but at the same time, they are constricted at least somewhat by formula, like the formula of the companion gets in trouble, the Doctor saves a companion.
Go ahead, Sean.
No, I was going to say real fast, I think they have a better idea now than they have. I mean, at least that's my hope. based on one episode. Yeah, I don't know. Dali, you go.
No, well, I was going to say, you bring up this great point about the formula, the Doctor Who formula, this young, attractive girl, this companion that fawns over the Doctor, and he has to save her every time. And there was a little bit of saving this episode, but I think what I found interesting was that they took all those conventions of Doctor Who and they tried to systematically break them down, or at least throw them back in the face of those in their own faces, I guess you could say, throughout the episode. Because the whole idea of attractiveness and the veil, right? Mana Vastra basically says she doesn't wear the veil because she's hiding herself. She's wearing the veil because it's everybody just looks at, skin deep, I guess you could say, to continue using the theme of skin. And they even bring up the point of this whole flirtatious aspect with Jenny and Clara at halfway through the episode as well. So this idea of the companion typically being this younger, attractive girl starts to get broken down. And even to the, like I said, even to the point where the Doctor says, I'm not your boyfriend, or however he said it, not necessarily literally saying boyfriend, but the idea of this companion that consistently hangs on, relies on this Doctor, this male figure, I guess you could say. And I found it really good from that aspect. I mean, again, Clara was on her own a lot. I'm going to stick with Clara because it sounds like what the Doctor says. She's off on her own quite a bit often in this episode, and she's starting to kind of have to. She's forced to piece things together on her own. People don't want to help her. Mana Vastra, a couple times in the episode, just kind of leaves her hanging out to dry and says, Cookie, don't worry about it. We got this covered, all right? You hang out here, wear this pretty dress, and we'll let the big folks take care of it. And again, that's a total, I think, that's a premeditated slap in the face of those conventions, because Clara even gets upset at that whole idea. And she says, hey, wait a minute, this isn't the way it should be anymore. This isn't how it's supposed to be. She was supposed to fawn over this attractive Doctor, but she doesn't. So I think that the things they did this episode and some of the stuff that took place in the 50th and the time of the Doctor, day of the Doctor, I think my whole idea of Clara has changed. At first, I didn't think her character was developed at all. This was last year, right? Last year.
Because it wasn't.
Yeah. Series 7 didn't... I basically didn't like her as a character. She didn't really have a purpose. But I think the last two episodes of last year, the specials, and now this episode, have really started to give her a nice focus, right? It's almost like she realizes that of who the Doctor is, because she's seen the Doctor's history. She knows he's had these attractive young girls with him. I mean, she even makes this kind of coy point of, no, I'm not like them. I prefer older men. But in the back of her mind, I think she's thinking, I kind of have to fall for this, for a younger doctor, but he's not young anymore. So she's seen all of this take place. She knows what the typical situation is, and so she's now dumbfounded that this older Doctor doesn't view her the same way. He's older. It's a different situation. And to me, I think that's going to make her a stronger, viewable character, and story-wise as well. So I'm really much more intrigued in her now. As opposed to before.
I agree with you that she's more well-developed. I disagree in the whole idea that, like, I think you are misinterpreting a couple of things that are going on in this episode. And there are things that I have problems with, and, like, what I was trying to get at a little bit ago. Things like, I don't think, it's the characters constantly trying to sit around and reinforce the idea that she is not reeling necessarily from his change in age or attractiveness, because she's just they're like, I don't have to be attracted to him, or like, I don't have to, like, you know, to find him interesting or want to go hang out with him and stuff like that. And they're I think that the show is constantly trying to reinforce the idea that that was never what she thought throughout the episode and stuff like that. And not that she is like, oh, I can't believe he's so, you know, old now, not attractive looking anymore. I think that what they're trying to say is that, you know, they're constantly trying to say, like, that was the doctor's fault, not her fault. And when he says at the end, like, I wasn't, you said something like, he rephrased, like, where I think you kind of phrased it incorrectly, where it was, he says, like, I'm not your boyfriend. And then he said, then you had said, like, well, I'm not saying it was necessarily your fault. No, like, what he said was, I wasn't saying that for you. Like, he was, like, what he's saying isn't that she fell in love with him because of, and it was his fault. What he's saying is that he was in putting himself in a position where he thought of himself as her boyfriend. Yeah. Like, and she never thought that at all. And I think that's what Robert was trying to get at.
Kind of agree, kind of don't, but I think it's more on, I think it's more on Moffat than it is on the characters here, because I feel like they flirted with that kind of story, but they never pulled the trigger on it, you know, because in the beginning, Clara was just something like a puzzle the doctor had to solve, and so her character kind of struggled there, right? And then when they got past that, they kind of bounced around this weird quasi-flirty side, and then... You know, near the end of Smith's run, they kind of established Clara as sort of a control freak with, you know, like wanting and needing to be around him and stuff like that. Now, but they never really, you know, delved on the whole, like, are they kind of a romantic couple? Is it really one side? Like, this is the most pronounced they've made it, right? And I feel like it's more of... A way to get away from the young flirtiness of all of the past couple seasons of Doctor Who than it is necessarily that they did such a good job establishing Clara and the Doctor having that kind of relationship. But that said, it doesn't matter because that's where they're going with it now, right?
Right.
Like this was used to establish like, well, you know, I'm not your boyfriend. And she's like, I never said you were. And he's like, I didn't say it was your fault. Which is brilliant. Like
that's not what he said though. He doesn't say, I never said it was your fault. Like that, he said, like, he doesn't say, like, I never said it was your fault. I'm pretty sure he says something more like, I wasn't saying it for you or something like that. Or I wasn't trying to, like, I'd have to go back.
No, he basically indicates that, like, you know, she says, I never called you that or I never said you were that or whatever. And he basically says, well, I never said you did. Like, he comes out basically saying he was flirty. He was trying to stay young. He was forgetting who he was and how old he was and stuff. Now, it's a nice form of writing, and it's actually a little bit of a tip of the hat to Moffat for handling it the way he does, and making it like giving us that kind of characterization of the Doctor, right? Where, you know, he chose to look young for that long, and he chose to forget how old he was and forget all the other stuff, which is again a theme that came up in the 50th. But more to the point with Clara, and you know, I'll say it again, it's kind of exciting because I think we're all in agreement on various levels of I don't dislike her. Or at least I didn't dislike her as much as some of us did. But I think we were all in agreement that she was kind of a shallow character, really just an ends to a means. And this episode really is the first one we get where we see what she could become, right? Like an equal on the same ground, like standing around when she, you know, when the doctor isn't there to save her, or, you know, using a life, which we finally see more of, like her life outside of the TARDIS, like when she uses her memories as a teacher to kind of mess with the robot. I mean, that's awesome, right? Like she has these kind of experiences with life and kids and stuff like that, where she can call on that. And let's not overstate, you know, she was left alone completely. Like she was given no help. Like he just bailed, right? And he left her in a room, you know, to just kind of figure it out on her own. Granted, you know, he knew he was coming back, and it circles back to that conversation we were having about how there will always be at least a little bit of that plot serving dynamic on the show, because that's what the show is. But she, in my opinion anyway, this plants some really good seeds that we've been missing for a long time with this character, who, you know, up until now you really couldn't differentiate from Amy or Rose or anybody else because she was just kind of there. But the way she handles the robots, the way she goes toe-to-toe with the doctor's comments that show us or remind us that she is, you know, a controlling person and she does have an ego and all this other stuff, not necessarily all good traits, but at least they're traits, right? Like we have more to work with now with this character than we've had in a season and a half or however it's been. So
totally agree. And I'm really looking forward to seeing her character develop. And I know they're going to introduce somewhat of a what it sounds like they're going to introduce a love interest to her, one of her other teachers. But I'm interested to see. I'm actually looking forward to for once to see how you know how her character develops, because I mean I jokingly mentioned over Twitter that she's climbed above Martha now in my list, but I think she's starting. There's a good potential for
poor Martha.
Yeah, poor Martha.
Another one poorly written that'll suffer forever in the history books.
I think there's good potential that that Clara can end up having some fantastic stories, storylines, and plots and development this year. So,
and if I think that's
yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
I'm just going to agree with you. I think you know. Hopefully, that's where we're going, right? And hopefully, that's what she needed as a character was a little bit of a jolt away from what they didn't know what they were doing, right? They had no idea how they were going to finally define her dynamic with Smith and everything. And now they've retroactively done that, right? By her reaction to his change and his regeneration and everything else, they're filling in the blanks a little bit that they, you know, we didn't know the answers to at the time.
Right.
So, but that's my hope too. I mean, granted, she'll never be a Rory.
Correct. Who was fantastic.
And she'll never be Donna's Gramps. But, you know, I'm with you. I think by the end of this season, hopefully we'll all have a different opinion on her and how she's written. And hopefully we will at least understand, you know, why or how she is or, you know, does what
I
she
mean,
does.
So. It sounds like she might not be sticking around for long, too. This might be her last
season. Yeah, it's okay, too, right? Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean...
It's just super, super hard to keep a character around who was developed originally as a plot device.
And like, she may very well still be a plot device this year in helping us learn about what the Doctor is, right? Because, again, this is a brand new Doctor. So not only is the audience learning, a potentially brand new audience learning about this Doctor, but they may use her to help figure that out, right? I mean, am I a good man? That whole question, which is going to come up this next episode, that's going to be a big part of she has to answer. Well, who is the Doctor? Well, the Doctor can't answer by himself through his actions, because we do have a brand new audience. I think they're going to use some of her, maybe unfairly a little bit, to help answer some of those. So,
yeah, and we'll see. But, you know, I can honestly say I'm more excited. Well, no, scratch that. I'm more interested in seeing where she goes than I was by the end of last season.
Yeah.
Good. So, okay. Good enough. Good enough.
Most definitely.
Now, I guess we can talk about what just the minor disappointments of the episode.
Yeah. I think we're all in the same boat.
I don't have as many complaints as I've seen others have, but I will say that I was let down by the return of the Clockwork Droids.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought they were – you want to talk about a plot device. Mm. and, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll be back later. I mean, clearly, you know, the half-face man or whatever.
Yeah.
He is hanging out somewhere.
Yeah.
In heaven, apparently.
But, you know, it was just – it was another one of those episodes where I feel like, you know, the villain – it just didn't live up to
the potential. It's not good. Yeah, it wasn't a good villain.
Potential, especially when you – I don't know about you guys, but I have really fond memories of Girl in the Fireplace.
Yes.
I watched that episode very recently, and that's still holds up. It's pretty good.
And I thought the way they handled them – agreed. And I thought the way they handled them there was brilliant. I thought the twist at the end was brilliant about, you know, with the parts and everything.
You know, that. So I totally agree with you. This had the – this – if this was at any other season of Doctor Who, this would have been a very meh episode, at best, I think. Because there really wasn't anything that was I mean, I think the T-Rex was a bit of a wasted opportunity. The Paternoster Gang, very wasted this episode. But Peter Capaldi and his moments stole the show. And I almost wonder
right.
if that's what this episode was designed to be. Granted, I think 90 minutes was too long. They could have cut this down. I would have rather had them focus more on him than an overall kind of bad guy clockwork droid plot anyways, but I think 90 minutes was maybe too long for this episode because there were parts where we're starting to wonder, what does this really have to do with anything? But if it wasn't for Capaldi, I think this would have been a very, very bland episode overall. With Capaldi, I was happy leaving it. I was very satisfied.
Well, I think the way to look at it is we're not going to remember.
Correct.
Well, so there were definitely some Moffatisms there, right? Like there was some treading of the same ground, or definitely some scene padding, which is whatever. The scene with Strax and doing the medical exam on Kara after he had already done like the whole "I'll take your coat." Well, I'm not wearing a coat. Like, okay, well, take your clothes off, and she's like, "Nope." Like that was really funny.
Exactly.
But then the same it just seemed like they were kind of retreading a little bit. Maybe it was to pad it out. I don't really know, but that kind of. The writing around the Doctor when he wasn't around was kind of weak. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Vastra and Jenny scenes too really do seem to again, outside of the ones that serve the plot, they seem to just really be, I don't know, they're reaching Captain Jack levels of innuendo and stuff.
I really, really liked the scene with the painting that was actually a map where Madame Vastra is having Jenny pose and everything like that because she wants to have Jenny around looking good. Like, that was pretty funny.
Brilliant.
But they just seem to me, now that we've seen them a bunch and we've returned to them a bunch, and I get why, it's probably comfortable to use, well-known characters to introduce the new Doctor and stuff like that. But they just seem to me like they're very one note now, right? Like Strax is the medic, and he's going to make the medic jokes because he's out of touch with humanity, and Vastra and Jenny are the lesbian couple, and they're going to, oh, man. And they really just seem to be there just to kind of fill in that time when the Doctor isn't around. So I thought that was kind of weak. And there was something else. And then, of course, the villain... I thought didn't live up to the potential. And I guess
my issue with the villain, really, I think the introduction of the villain, not the thing where he's takes the guy's eyes, but the diner scene, I think is super, super effective. But then the reveal of the villain's motivation is literally non-existent. Their motivation is plot device. Their motivation is motivation.
Right. It's motivation to get the Doctor to do what he needs to do when he needs to do it. And I think the best villains in the show are the ones that have those clear motivations, whether or not they're twisted or whether or not they're ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But this was just yet another, we crashed out of time. And, we've been trying to fix ourselves and whatever.
That's like the fourth time they've used that story, too.
To go a million – those robots have been on Earth for millions of years. Right.
They could gather enough skin at that point?
Come on. Well, it's just – it was – I thought it was yet again another example of the Moff just I don't know. It just wasn't the sum of its parts. So I agree with you guys.
Parts?
That, when not have the parts. I think when we look back on this, we'll remember a very stunning, very impressive debut for Capaldi, but the rest we're not going to remember. We're not going to remember the jokes. We're not going to remember the villain motivation and stuff like that. But there are some key – one sec. There are some really key good – some really good scenes. Kara underground holding her breath. All the tension there was great. The villain being the robotic, what's my basic programming conversation with the Doctor was when the villain was great. And some of the side stuff is good too. But overall, I think it comes down to Capaldi elevating it way higher than it would have been. Like you were saying, it would have just been a meh episode otherwise.
Right.
One important thing that goes off exactly what you're talking about, just to illustrate what you're talking about, I guess, is that you look back at the introductions of all the other previous Doctors, and it's who the hell cares about Prisoner Zero? Who the hell cares about the Sycorax or the Nestine consciousness? The villains in those introductory episodes weren't good either. They were just pretty standard villains that just existed to let you have the Doctor. They almost intentionally muted in a way. It's that way it gives the Doctor the time to shine. And we're not worrying about what the villains want.
Have you guys noticed how they tend to use these automatons, these droids, these robots a lot in kind of season openers? They did it a lot with the Tennant and the Eccleston era, and obviously I think Matt Smith, one of the seasons had.
I suppose they did, didn't they?
They almost use them a little bit too much.
I don't know about too much, because again, I think it, like, I think you put a blank face, like literally blank faced enemies in each of those encounters because you don't want them to steal the show from the Doctor. There's probably like an important reason why that they do it this way. I don't think it's a matter of doing it too much because each of them feels unique in their own ways. Like the nesting things felt different enough from the Clockwork Droids this time. Oh, one of my bigger problems with the Clockwork Droids in this one is that they just look so is exactly that. They just look so boring compared to the previous Clockwork Androids, which looked awesome. Like they were like they had the big giant key for the blade hands and the like sort of Victorian scary masks, and then you take their masks off and underneath it's like this clockwork head, and these guys are just like, I don't know, they're made of iron and they have a candle inside their heads. Yeah. It's just like, okay,
it's crazy. You'd think that skin would melt at some point, but here's a few thoughts from Marcus, because Marcus didn't want to send his thoughts along.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember Marcus?
Oh, yeah, he's on the show sometimes.
Actually, and these might actually get a spur a little bit more.
I'm glad that guy's good.
Yeah. But then I also want to get to some of the comments from some of our followers that they had some just fantastic comments. So here's Marcus' thoughts. His thoughts, he says, mediocre episode, saved by Capaldi, ruling. And Clara being pretty damn sassy. He loves the new intro sequence, which, by the way, was a fan-made sequence 9 months ago. Or no, sorry, 11 months ago, a fan made a Capaldi intro sequence, and Moffat loved it so much he had it remade for this season. Did you guys know about that? It's awesome.
Did not know about that.
Yeah, so,
yeah, it's really, really cool.
And I actually like the fan-made sequence slightly better than what was... but it wasn't done here. But he says he loved the new intro sequence, but hated the remix tune. Which,
yeah, they took some liberties.
They took some liberties on that original Doctor Who intro sequence song, right? And played that in there.
It's just, I like, not to derail you for too long. I'll be quick. But like, just the music and even the intro sequence, I thought to an extent, they're just so goddamn busy. There's just like, there's so much, like, it sounds like they took the original Doctor Who intro theme song and then just added six other instruments playing the same tune over it. And then it's kind of the same thing with the intro, which I think is fine. But then like, here's these giant clockwork gears and then Capaldi's face and then the TARDIS, and they're all flying at you on the screen at the same time. And you don't have a moment to appreciate any one of them as an individual piece because they're all coming at you so super fast.
Mm-hmm. He follows up with the final 5 minutes really were the strongest of the episode, in his opinion.
Also true.
I think all of us kind of agree with that. Vaster.
But they're up there. I think the diner scene was super strong as well. I think his scene with the half-faced man was arguably the highlight. But I do like where Marcus's head is at.
I actually like the scene with the doctor stealing the coat. He says, "Give me your coat." And the guy says, "Well, then I'll be cold." He says, "Well, give it to me. That way both of us won't be cold." Which is really interesting. I love
He says,
"I really wish I could do his accent because he's so quotable. He's so quotable already."
He says there's no sense in both of us being cold. But like, it's like it's a good moment because it's like such flawed logic, because like currently if he takes the coat, then the only difference is that he mathematically, which is what he's trying to argue with, is that like, you know, it'll be the exact same thing. One of them will be cold and the other one won't be.
It's just great. And he's, again, you're right, Sean, he's so quotable. And I think that, again, that was fantastic. And he says, Vastra and the crew and the dinosaur were totally wasted, which I think that's who we all kind of.
I don't necessarily agree on Vastra being wasted and the crew, but like the dinosaur certainly. I think that was totally wasted.
And by the way, we're all in agreement now that the universe that Who takes place in is absolutely not our past, right? Like,
correct.
Between, like, the giant, like, all the things that have plagued, like, Victorian London.
Yeah, the giant robot and the dinosaur.
And the dinosaur and everything else. Like, it's just like, nope. I respect that. This is what happens on that Earth, you know, whatever. But not ours. Like, that Who takes place in an alternate dimension, because there is no friggin' way that these dinosaurs are rocking downtown London and you never hear about it again.
Agreed. He also says that the clockwork guys were dull as bleep. He did not like those clockwork droids. I think they could have been very cool, but again, were really underutilized. I personally liked that restaurant scene, the cafe scene, because it was almost like the inside of a the old like wall clocks, the little birdhouse wall clocks, where the things come out, do their thing, and they go back in. And I felt that this was a lot. It could have been like this. It could have been like that, I should say. But it really wasted potential with those characters. But Moffat tends to do that. He tends to waste the potential and not give us the big bad guys like we want. I mean, they're such cool ideas, right? Dinosaurs on an airplane, brilliant. And then he finally
on a spaceship, Dally.
Sorry, dinosaurs on an airplane would be kind of cool. I was thinking snakes on a plane for some reason. And he finally says, "Who is the floppy bird at the end?" I like floopy bird. I like floopy bird and flappy bird. Who is the bird at the end?
That's the obvious thing we've been ignoring here is who is Missy?
He says, "Why does she piss him off already?" And it was revealed. Thanks, Marcus. Thanks for your thoughts. It was revealed that she was the one that sent the message out that got the Doctor and Clara together, right?
She was also the one that gave the Doctor Clara the Doctor's phone number.
Yeah that's what's being hinted at. Yep.
And so, and she says that she's his girlfriend. So
yeah.
I don't know where that's going, and I did not like that curveball at the end. I did not like that quite at all.
Well, that's our new big bad, right? Like
that's a new for this year, yeah.
I do not understand you or Marcus's reactions to that, because it's like, oh, here's 15 seconds of the big bad reveal. It's like, oh, I fucking hate it already. It's like, what? We saw 15 seconds of it, and it's just the new big bad.
Exactly. Yep.
No, not exactly. there's no exactly there. It's like, what the hell about that could possibly make you angry? It's just like, You just said like you don't like it.
So I don't like that scene. I was trying to digest a lot of what you're saying. I did not like that scene because there was nothing there that it didn't resolve anything for me, because we don't know who this character is.
Of course it didn't resolve anything. It's a teaser for the big bad. Like, it's like, oh, there's a crack in the universe. Oh, there's a crack in the universe. Oh, fuck that shit. Like, oh man, it makes me so angry that there's a crack. I don't know.
I think if I may jump in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no problem with it, Steven. Like, I agree with you. I think it's a fine teaser. You know, I'm curious what it's going to be, even though we all know it's probably just going to be some regenerated River Song nonsense. And all
it's not
going
to be, though. It's not.
But I get where they're coming from, because this is a potentially bad sign based on all the things we don't like about Moffat and the overarching arcs that don't pay off. And like the teases that go nowhere and all this other stuff. So granted, I have no problem with it yet. However, it makes me very wary that, you know, this guy went on record saying there aren't going to be any overarching stories anymore. He was going to be, he wanted to let scenes, breathe and they were going to be more self-contained stories. So I get it. Like, I'm fine with her, and I'm curious what the promised land is. And I'm guessing that's going to be overarching theme and blah, blah, blah. But I also completely understand why people do not like that kind of ending, because it's setting up for a potential world of Moffat disappointment all over again.
That's
especially if every episode teases it. And by episode 6 or 7, we're all crazy about what it was going to be, and we're all theorizing and everything. And then it's going to wind up being the lame duck. So I get it. I totally understand. I don't feel that way yet, but I get it.
No confidence that Moffat can pull this off right now. And that's what lets me down. I would have loved to have that episode just breathe and let it be as is, and not have to tease something that we may not see until the very end of the season. And so the whole season, we're wondering, when are they going to bring this stupid this idea in? And
or the best will be like, they'll introduce it now, we won't hear about it till like series 10.
Yeah, that's just
like, oh, who blew up the TARDIS? Well, it was kind of the Silence, because they were kind of bad at the time, even though they spun off from good, because they all knew they're going to be in Trenzalore, even though they could have just done this, and this.
Yep.
And you waited 3 years for nothing.
Yeah. So I
get it.
No,
I totally
no
get
confidence.
It.
And that's what ruins it for me. But great, great points by Marcus on what he feels.
As usual.
Great points about his own opinions.
Great points about having opinions, Marcus. Wish you were here. Next time, be here. We do have a few comments
time,
from some of our readers and listeners and all that fun jazz. So I'm going to read a few of these things. I asked a question, a couple questions on Saturday during the show, and I said things like, you know, I asked how people felt about Capaldi as their first Doctor, and then as just their overall general impressions of the episode. So, Marina Andrews, follower Marina Andrews, says she liked the change of the accent and the attitude is great. She likes how they put in the deeper emotions.
I can complain about things.
And exactly. And not only in Clara and the Doctor, but she says the true emotion into the dinosaur. And I think what she means is that the dinosaur wasn't just this big rampaging monster. It actually had a mind of what it wanted to do and get out of there. So
I'm not flirting. Yeah. Well, kind of flirting. No, I'm definitely not flirting. I speak dinosaur.
I did like that. I'm Scottish. I can complain about something. I thought that was...
Yeah, that was nice. That was really cool.
That's at @Marina_Andrews.
Good comments.
At KyleMac13, replying back to the first, his first Doctor. He says, Eccleston was his first Doctor because of Netflix, which was the whole reason I got into Doctor Who. He says, but this is the first time watching a premiere of a brand new Doctor. So he didn't see the Smith premiere. He's caught up on Netflix. So he's one of the folks that's going to be, this is going to be their, potentially their Doctor, their first time going through this journey. So that's at KyleMac13. At Milta84, Megan B. says, exactly the same, started with Eccleston, but Tennant will always be her Doc. Our very own Rex at Hairdo says Tennant was his, but Eccleston is a very close second. Those are some really kind of interesting thoughts. And then at Trey Cup, Emmy says he hated Clara. He liked Madame Vastra and Jenny and loved Peter as a Doctor. And what the hell was up with Strax? Seemed like his lighting and makeup were extremely off. I did kind of notice that Strax almost looked a little plastic, I guess. Would that be a way to say it? He didn't look as... I'm sure they used the same prosthetics or slightly modified prosthetics in the past. Maybe it was the lighting that kind of killed the design of him, because he did look a little more static, a little more...
Yeah, I didn't notice it.
...stiff than he used to, I guess.
I didn't notice anything like that, so I'm not sure.
Scott Nixon, Scotte Nixon, says it's the most acting he's seen from Coleman from Clara. So that's kind of an interesting thought. It's the most acting. I'm curious about the.
And it was quite good.
Yeah.
Like her scenes in the basement of that restaurant were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Eric Kazakowski, who's @the_redux. Says her first Doctor was 9, but her Doctor was number 4. So that's an interesting one. I think that maybe Marcus's exact same response, except that his Doctor's first Doctor probably was Doctor 1. And then at Starlack UK, Carl Padgum says first Doctor he watched as it aired was Christopher Eccleston's. Wow, so he actually was able to watch as it aired. He says he should include the odd repeat of one or two serials on BBC Two every so often. But yeah, despite playing catch up, the first was Eccleston's. So, he also says thanks to VHS, the first Doctor he saw was Pertwee, plus some Tom Baker, and even on the Sci-Fi Channel 7 years ago. And we're getting a lot of tweets for Tom Baker and a few other folks, but save your prodigy says I like it. Peter Capaldi was amazing. Thank you, Savior. And then Solomon Grundy even mentioned that he likes Strax quite a bit. He definitely feels that with Strax, old habits will die hard. And I'm assuming he means just kind of Strax is a typical, the whole medical doctor type of thing. So. His one-liners, but some good comments from people and who their first Doctor was, what they felt from the episode. And we're always looking for more feedback from our listeners and potentially our readers. Now that we have a website, you can find us at LoneTardis.com. So we'll have this episode up, and make sure you guys leave some some comments on the episode here and questions, and we'll probably start posting questions and stuff for folks to leave comments on that we can discuss during the next episode. But final thoughts on this episode, gentlemen? It's been a little bit over an hour. I'm curious to see just overall.
I have so much overall stuff still to discuss.
I know, and I'm assuming we're going to get to a lot of that when we do.
Well, yeah, and it'll come out as the season progresses, but we haven't talked about the face thing. We haven't talked about any theories about who the big bad is. And it's exciting. You know what it is?
Yeah.
Here's my final thoughts. I'll segue right into that question. Thank you, Dolly.
it's exciting. I can do for you, Sean, is that's what I'm...
You know, Sean, you are the voice of this podcast, so, you know, whenever you need to pipe up, you know.
Thank you. So, I think I could sum it up. And I watched this in the theater, you know, and I was surrounded by hundreds of Whovians.
Wait, you saw the theater?
Oh, it was awesome. It was stellar. Like, people were dressed up. Like, they had sonic screwdrivers. I was really mad. I left my sonic screwdriver at home, but I wore my Who t-shirt, which is really great. It was stellar. It was a stellar experience. Two theaters, both of them packed. It was great. And it's an exciting time to be a Who fan. And not to say that that hasn't been true in recent years, because obviously the show is growing in popularity every year. But I just read that this was the BBC America's highest-rated premiere or highest watch premiere ever. Like, it broke records at the BBC America.
Nice.
And it's bigger than ever, and I think it's really great that now that the show is at its peak and it's still growing in terms of its fan base, that this kind of doctor comes in, this breath of fresh air. Capaldi, you breath of fresh air. Breath of fresh air comes in, and I really hope Moffat and his crew of writers and directors and everything, I really hope that they can match the level that Capaldi potentially brings this show to. Him alone elevates this to new heights. And you see it every second he's on screen. He's only been on screen for, what, 30 minutes total? And it was just fantastic. So I hope I don't go back on this as we see the rest of the season. But as of right now, I think this could be one of the best yet. I think that if Capaldi lives up, or if the writing lives up to what Capaldi is capable of, I think we're in for a real, real treat. And I think the good outweighs the bad in this episode. Are we rating this?
Yeah, you can rate it. That sounds fine. Go ahead, rate it.
Are you going out of five? Or?
Out of five.
Candleheads out of five.
How many out of five candleheads?
Five candleheads. Okay.
Please try. Sean, don't worry about hiding your disdain or anything for that. Like that. Like, you know, don't bother. You know, not on my account.
I wasn't even sure what you said. I was trying to process it, and I was trying to figure out what it was a reference to. Don't always assume that we're against you, Steven. This is a family.
Amen. It's not paranoid if everybody else needs to get you.
Don't do that voice. That's stupid. But. We're a gang.
Absolutely. Like,
you like that? That was some humor. I guess I. I want to give it like 10 for Capaldi alone, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously, I guess they realistic and grounded here. There were some shortcomings. Capaldi was so good, but certain things didn't live up. But Capaldi was so good. I'm gonna go a solid 3.5 out of 5 half face men.
I'll hop in here because I want Steven to have the final say. We rarely give Steven the final word, and this week I want Steven to have it all to him. Just have it all.
I approve.
I'm also going to say 3.5 out of 5. I was trying to figure out, because any other time this episode is a 2 to 2.5 at best. I think because the plot was mediocre, pacing was off, far too long of an episode. Too many ups and downs, but Capaldi was so good in this episode, and I hate to get on this, to be so happy and so excited so early, because I always get smacked down in the end, but I absolutely felt that you know, he has what it takes to be a wonderful, a wonderful doctor, and he alone knocked just up a couple points for me. So I'm going to say 3.5 out of 5. And my overall thoughts, again, I hate to be so enthusiastic about Capaldi's doctor, but it was so good. And
don't hate
what
it.
He
don't
did
hate it.
To elevate,
let it ride, bro.
Yeah, what he did to elevate Clara's character. I'm now totally intrigued to see their further interaction. I'm curious to see You know, if we get to see the Paternoster Gang again later this year, hopefully. But next week we're going to have Daleks. I like the ode to Don't Blink with Don't Breathe, although, again, it could have been a lot better, but they kind of – it was Moffitted a little bit. But, you know, I have such high hopes right now, which I haven't had in so long with the Doctor. I'm riding high from the Hartnell kind of biopic to now has been awesome. I'm so excited, so glad Doctor Who is back. I'm on cloud 8.5 right now out of 9. So yeah. And Steve.
Well, you know, when I was watching this episode, I thought to myself, "Well, this is pretty good, Doctor Who." You know,
I was really hoping that I was really hoping Sean would interrupt me before I could go any further because I had no follow up to that.
That is such a great start, Stephen. Please finish strong.
Yeah, well, now that I am allowed to have the final say, like, I know how much power that I'm wielding.
I know, but Dolly, just to make a quick reference on that other thing that you were talking
about. You're the reason this is an explicit podcast. It's because you make me say things. Both of you. Yeah, both of you guys.
I keep you honest. Swear. I don't make you do anything.
Yeah, you're the Mike Capaldi. You're the honest one. Love you, Sean.
Compliment. I'm your Capaldi.
I liked it. I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5. I think I liked the episode overall. I think that if you go back and watch, with that score is based on not the annals of Doctor Who, like necessarily every single episode of Doctor Who that's ever happened. I think that score is based more on episodes of Doctor Who that we've seen that are in the same vein. So like the episode with the David Tennant intro and the episode with the Matt Smith intro and the episode with the Christopher Eccleston intro. I think that it comes out as a 4 out of 5 among those episodes. We could be on that level of quality for the reasons that I already listed about why the villains being boring actually probably makes sense and isn't really much of a detriment so much as it is I still think that the motivations were pretty squidgy and kind of fade into a lot of the stuff you guys were talking about with Moffat, not having trust in Moffat pulling things off at the end, because the motivations for the characters here are are wrapped up in stuff that might never happen, and so we never ever get any kind of closure on that, so the episode doesn't really work as a self-contained entity because of that hanging thread. But I still think Capaldi was good. I think Clara was good. I still think Madame Vastra, Strax, and Jenny need their own show. As much wasted potential as there is in the motivations of the villains and the dinosaur, I still think it was just overall super, super solid.
Cool. Very good. With that, we're going to wrap up right now. We will, of course, be joining you much more regularly now since the season is back.
Every week.
How many episodes do we get now?
12, I think, plus the Christmas special.
Okay. Beautiful, wonderful. Cannot wait. And they're all in a row, which is fantastic. There's no breaks in there. It is wonderful. So please listen to us. Rate and review us if you can on iTunes. It's so helpful to get us up there. We've kind of shown up a few times in popular new podcasts, but we want to make sure that we're up there for a long time coming. Other ways you can get a hold of us, obviously you can follow us on Twitter at LonelyTardis. And now you can visit LonelyTardis.com. Check out that website and you're going to start to see all kinds of things happen. In fact, you kind of think of the podcast regenerating and having a website regenerate. The internet has regenerated into a Lonely TARDIS website, which means our website's still got a lot of dust. We just kind of launched it a couple weeks ago, and we're working on some of the content, the back end, and getting things going. But we'll have some cool stuff up there. Visit us. Leave comments. Tell us what you think. Tell us your ideas. Tell us your stories. We're going to have a lot of swag coming up, too, that we're giveaway. So just throwing that out there. It was a kind of pop culture weekends at a lot of places in the area. Barnes & Noble is especially in the area. And I scored a bunch of cool Doctor Who swag that I'll be looking to give out eventually as well. So with that said, you can find me at Dolly Domofsky on Twitter. You can find Steven.
At Steven Strom, STEVNSTROM.
You can find Sean
at Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON.
You can find Marcus at Annoyed Gamer. And
ANNOYEDGAMER. Yeah.
You got it. And
AMER. Yeah, okay.
Since everyone else is spelling theirs, I'll spell mine out. DALIDIMOVSKI. With that, season 3, episode 1 of The Lonely TARDIS has come to a close. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time where we discuss Into the Dalek.
Is that what it's called?
I believe it's what it's called. Theme music.
Sure is.
Steven.